Wow. Do you see what we lost? Did you get some sort of touch of from the height from which we've really fallen? From what it was like to be with God and then to lose that all? I mean, to think about it, sometimes it even really hurts physically. And sometimes we may not like to think about it. You know, we're only 2 episodes into this great story, and we've already seen 2 acts of disobedience from creatures that God have made, from humans and from angels. And 2 times, God punishes that disobedience of sin. The rebel angels were punished by God and cast out of heaven. Adam and Eve are disobedient, and they are punished and cast out of the garden. But despite this great loss, despite the great height that man and woman have fallen from, despite the punishment that God carries out no matter what, there's great hope hidden in the lines of this story. I can see hope in God's actions, and I can hear them in His words. And I want you to hear them, and I want you to see them too. Before I turn to that hope in this episode, I want to give you a warning about what we learn about the villain in this great story from this one episode. And I want us to understand the damage that evil has done to us. Number one, I want you to know that the adversary, and that's what Satan means, translated, it's adversary. The adversary twists words, and he plays with our thinking, and he appeals to our imaginations. What was the first thing he said to the woman? Did God really say? Did God really say that? The villain tries doubt first, and his doubt is always directed towards one thing. It's always trying to get us to doubt what God has said, to doubt His word, to doubt His command. And he's still doing it today. The villain is hoping that Eve won't remember what God has said. And that might be a perfect angle to play. Because it does seem when we go back and we read this story word for word, Genesis 1, 2, and 3, it seems that God, He made Adam first, then Eve second, and in that in-between time, He told Adam, don't eat from this tree. And so we're not sure if Eve heard that command directly from God. But we know that one way or another, she did hear it, either from God or through Adam. And Eve remembers, but somewhere along the line, she adds, or maybe Adam adds, not only don't eat from it, but don't touch it. God never said that. Never said don't touch it. But that's the kind of thing that the adversary likes to do. He likes to twist words and put doubt into our thinking, doubt that's directed towards God's command. The adversary, the second thing I want to warn you about is that the adversary lies. It's his native language. And it gets us to doubt that God punishes sin. He gets us to doubt that God punishes sin. You will surely not die. God won't punish you. He wouldn't do that. This shouldn't be a surprise to us. But we're fooled into this thinking all the time. Sometimes it seems like, and maybe this is just my perspective, but it kind of seems like sometimes men, we're fooled into this even a little more. That nothing will happen. And I don't know if that's part of our youth that still clings to us, that I'm indestructible, I can do anything, and I'll come out of it alive. I don't know if it's that or what, but we don't think the consequences will catch us. You know, a man will look at pornography and then afterwards go, you know what? There wasn't really any consequences to that. Nothing bad happened to me, and I didn't really harm anyone else. So he keeps participating in that sin, thinking that there'll be no consequences. Then 3 years after he's married, his wife discovers his sin. And all of a sudden she feels betrayed and she wants to leave him. All of a sudden there's consequences to that sin. Believe me, men and women, don't be fooled. Every sin has its consequence, and every sin will be punished one way or another. I'd really like to talk about that other right now, but I want to stay right within this story, right within this episode. I won't jump ahead to episode 9 or 10 down the road, but sin will be punished one way or another. Have no doubt about it. The villain comes to steal and destroy any good that you have. The third thing I want to warn you about with the adversary is that he tempts us by trying to capture our imaginations with the idea of seizing and taking glory instead of waiting on God to bestow it. And if you remember our episode, the first episode, isn't that what the adversary was guilty of himself? Trying to seize and take the glory of God. And yet, the truth is, he tempts every one of us. You will be like gods. It wasn't just Eve that he tempted, but he continues to tempt us today. Now, I want you to take a look at the results of the adversary's work. Look at the effects of disobedience on Adam and Eve. For the first time in their lives, they feel guilt, they feel shame, they feel fear, and they hide from God. In this episode, their shame was connected to their nakedness, and they tried to cover themselves. But their attempt in trying to cover themselves was inadequate. They were trying to cover that shame, which was really connected to their guilt. But then God, because those fig leaves were inadequate, God had to come and make something that truly covered them. You know, today, most people don't worry about concern over covering their sexual parts. In fact, they flaunt them. But the one area of our bodies that we do cover today, we cover our eyes. We cover our eyes. You know, people like to wear shades, sunglasses, with the idea that nobody can look at my eyes or they can't tell where I'm looking. You know, people do that? Yeah. And also, when we look at someone, when they look back at us and they return the gaze, we're quick to avert our eyes. Here in this country, when someone returns the look, we avert our eyes in less than a second. In other countries, it's 2 seconds, 3 seconds. And somehow, I think we all know and believe that the eyes really are the window to our souls. And there's something there that where there's shame and we don't want people to see. And so we avert our eyes or we try to cover them. Every time we try to cover our guilt and shame, it's inadequate. It's not good enough. Only God can cover our shame. One of the results of the villain's work is shame. You know, the other effect that Adam and Eve, that was upon them, was blame. When Adam is asked what happened, Adam blames God and Eve for the choice. I know we always think that Adam blamed Eve, but look at his words. The woman you put here with me. I mean, he's got guts. He's blaming God for his choice. But maybe have some of us done that too? Yeah, yeah. And then when Eve is asked what has happened, she blames the serpent for her choice. You know, shame and blame can really distort things for us. Now, I don't want you to act like you're unfamiliar with this whole blame thing, and I want you to know that even guys like me who stand up all the time and say, we need to take responsibility for our choices and be men, even guys like me, get sucked into the blame game. It happens to all of us. And I'll give you an example, and maybe you'll find some connection with this, especially some of you parents with small children. There was a time when our kids were babies, and they'd wake up at night and cry. And I remember one particular night, after working, having a hard day of work, the baby woke up and was crying. And I was the first awake. Sherry was still asleep. And thinking, you know what, I'll get up. I'm going to take care of that baby I love and let my beautiful bride rest. And I went to get up and it's like, ugh. And I lay back down and it's like, nah, not going to do it. I'm too tired. Too tired. So I closed my eyes, pretending like I'm asleep. And laying there, and the baby's still crying. And my wife still isn't waking up. And so I start thinking, and some of the thoughts go like this. You know, I'm a hardworking guy, and I get up early for work. Well, Sherry, she can sleep in, she can take a nap. Well, next thought, you know, I'm a fair guy. You know, what was it? I mean, 2 weeks ago, I got up and I did my turn taking care of the baby at night. Yeah, I'm a fair guy. It's her turn. And it goes on. You know what? What I do is important. I mean, I work in the church. We deal with eternal matters. What I do is important. And I need to be there. And I'm a good dad. And I'm a good husband. Yeah. But my wife is still dead asleep. And then I started thinking some other thoughts then. I started thinking, how come she isn't getting up? Is she lazy or what? What's going on? I mean, she's really being inconsiderate. I mean, I got to get up early, and I got to do this all the time. The fact that I really need some sleep here, you know? I guess she doesn't appreciate what I do. Psh. Oh, wait a minute. She moved. Oh, no. Wait a minute. Is she really awake? Is she faking it? Ah, what a lousy mom. Wow. I know you're thinking, what a jerk I am. But have you been there before? Men or women? So from the moment, you know, I chose to not honor what I knew I ought to do, something changed. You know, before that moment, before that, it was, love that beautiful baby, love my wife, and I'm going to get up and help. Then I made a choice. After that choice, all of a sudden, everything changes. What do I start doing? I start inflating my own virtue. I'm an important guy. I do important things, and I need my sleep, and I'm a good husband, and I'm a good dad. And maybe some of those things are true, but I was certainly making it a whole lot bigger at that moment. And then, what was the other thing I did? When I looked at someone else, I looked at my wife. And what did I do? I inflated her faults. Made them a whole lot bigger than they really were. Yeah, she maybe had one or two of those, but man, I blew them up. Why was I doing all that? Why did my view of myself and my view of her change? It's because of shame. I didn't do the thing that I knew I ought to do. And after shame comes blame. So I went to look and blame. That self-justifying. You know, and after that choice, everything I saw was distorted. I couldn't see reality for what it really was. I didn't see myself. I saw myself in a distorted way, and I saw my wife in a distorted way. But I want you to know, this isn't something that just happens between husbands and wives, is it? I mean, this happens between parents and children. It happens between employees and employers. It even happens between friends, doesn't it? Something happens. A choice is made. There's some shame. Then there's blame. And then there's this distorted view. And we don't see things in reality any longer. So I just want to warn you. I just want to warn you. If you're in a situation where everybody around you is messing up and they're screw-ups and it's all their fault and you're the hero, I want to tell you, you may not be in reality any longer. You might be seeing things really distorted, and you might need to dig a little deep and look in there and question your own virtue. Yeah, that's what you might need to do. But I want you to know, This is exactly the same scenario that the adversary is playing over and over and over again with each one of us. It's what he wants, shame and blame to continue. And he wants everyone to have a distorted view of reality that causes us to have a mindset that sets us up to keep sinning and to keep doing wrong or to keep omitting the right that we ought to do. Shame, blame, and disobedience. That's his game. And that's the place that we've fallen to. That's the place the villain wanted us. It's not the place that God wanted us. It's not. This is the perished kingdom that the adversary has wrought. But I told you that there was hope in this episode. Between the lines of this story, and when God shows up in the garden, hope arrives. Adam and Eve are afraid and they hide from God. Fear was something they never felt before towards God. They knew that they had disobeyed and they knew that there would be disappointment. But what does God do? What does he do? Does God say, I can't believe you ate from that tree. I told you not to eat from that tree. And what did you do? You did it. And now I'm going to have to carry out these consequences. And here's it going to go. And did he give him a lecture? No. What did he do? He asked a question. He asked a question, where are you? All right, pause just a second. God is omniscient. He knows everything. God is omnipresent. He's everywhere. He's omnipotent. He's all-powerful. Why does he need to ask, where are you? He knows exactly where they're at. He already knows what has happened. Why does he ask? Well, he gives them the chance to confess. You know, sometimes we probably do this with our kids. We jump and down on them, give them a speech when they've chosen to do something wrong. But we do our kids a real disservice when we jump on them with our speeches. You know, if we, like God, first give our kids the chance to say with their own words what they did wrong, we're teaching them from the beginning of an important practice that they're going to carry out the rest of their lives, the practice of confession. So God hears their confessions, even though they're tinted with the blame game. And then God tells them what the consequences will be for their disobedience. Again, God punishes sin. There's no way around it. God casts them out of Eden. But that's not the end of the story. I mean, that kind of seems like it should be, doesn't it? I mean, it's a beautiful place. God has one danger, one choice. They're tempted, they choose it, punishment, you're out of the garden. It seems like that should be the end of the story, but it's not. It's not the end of the story. Look at this. God punishes, but then he continues to provide, he continues to protect, and he continues to let his blessing fall on Adam and Eve. God, what does he do first? He provides a covering for them that is adequate to cover their nakedness and their shame. And it was animal skins, which implies that there was death. That in fact, God sacrificed these animals for Adam and Eve. It's the first bloodshed. You see, anything less than sacrifice of blood is inadequate to cover guilt and shame. God still provides after the fall. God still provides for you and for me after we make a stupid choice. God still has something adequate to cover up that guilt and shame. You see, the story doesn't end after a stupid choice. Look at God. God also protects. He protects Adam and Eve by putting this angel at the entrance of the garden, this angel with a flaming sword to keep them from going in and tasting from the tree of life. God knew that to live in that fallen state forever would be horrible, that it couldn't happen. And so God protected them from that. God still protects after the fall. God still protects you and me after we make stupid choices. The story doesn't end after we make a stupid choice. God keeps his past blessing upon Adam and Eve. You see, he didn't after they made the choice, he didn't look at him, come to him and say, well, yeah, because of that, well, shoot, you know, this whole blessing of being husband and wife, forget that. You're going to separate corners of the earth. No, time out. That's done. Don't enjoy the blessing of marriage. And he doesn't go, well, because you did this, well, sorry, that whole be fruitful and multiply, taking away that blessing. You aren't going to have that one anymore. No, children for you. He didn't do that. No. What does God do? Instead, his blessing to them to be fruitful and multiply continues. And although each child is now tainted by sin, God allows life to continue for a time before they return to the dust. God still blesses after the fall. God still blesses you even after you make a stupid mistake. The story doesn't have to end there. I know that there was a tinge of sadness to this part, this episode. There's sadness to it because we see the sin marring humans. We see the sacrifice of life for the first time. We see separation from God. We see the perfection of the garden gone forever. We see hardship and work and pain and suffering and life. It's a change we don't want to see. And then, to all of that, the adversary is still on the loose. But when you go back to God's words, as he's laying down the consequences for Adam and Eve, you need to also notice that he lays down the consequences for the villain in this story. And though the adversary has brought down humans through deception, God says that one day there will be a human descendant who will triumph and will bring him down. Though Satan will nip at that future hero's heel, and again, a nip at the heel, that's an inconsequential blow. It's not a death blow. But even though the adversary will nip at that future hero's heel, that descendant of Adam will in turn strike a death blow to Satan. One day, God will send the serpent crusher, and he will crush Satan, the adversary of our souls. The enemy may harass us and deceive us for a time, and those deception and our sin has brought about our separation from God and a fallen world. God says that the adversary's part in the story is going to end, but ours is going to continue. The story is not over. Hope is coming. The story is not over for you, and the story is not over for me. The band's going to come on up here, and we're going to have a time where we respond to the Word of God. And I know that maybe there's some of you here today that you're dealing with the consequences of a choice, a really bad choice you made, or maybe choices that you made, and you're going through the consequences. They can't be avoided. They're going to be dealt out. But I want you to know, despite the consequences, God still wants to bless you. God still cares for you. He still wants to protect you. He still wants to provide for you. He still wants to bless you. And there's maybe some of you here today that there's some good you know you should have done, but you didn't do it. And you see what could have been if you would have done that good, and it grieves you. And there's something in you that tells you, I know I should have done that, but I didn't. I left it out. I want to tell you, the story's not over. There's still a chance. But for either one of us, those who have admitted, those who've committed, I think we just need to take the posture of Adam and Eve. I know that there's maybe a fear in us. We want to hide. We want to run away from God. But instead, we need to come to him. And when he says, where are you? And I think that's a spiritual question. Where are you spiritually? We need to tell him. I blew it, God. I screwed it up. I disobeyed you. And yeah, there'll be consequences. But our God forgives. and He knows how to cover guilt and shame. And know that whatever we try to do on our own, it won't cover it. It won't erase it. Only He can do that.